The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my dapper colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Notice how that voice gets hoarse by Fridays. That's our own little guilty playback over the course of the week. Coming up today, how bracketology can be just as good for your pockets now as it is in March. We're going to talk about a team that starts falling asleep from the tryptophan even before they get to their Thanksgiving turkey. And we're going to test drive a Jaguar that we think is particularly good on certain road courses.
So, we're doing the show on Friday morning. And Dave, last night, lots of football, lots of hoops, action. I mean, this is really a great time of year to be a sports bettor. What'd you see that you want to share with our listening audience? What's your first take?
What we saw and what we rooted for so much. And, of course, we joined a lot of people when we were rooting for it. Denver to win on that last drive against the Jets. We've broken down Tim Tebow a couple of times on this show, talking about the particular weaknesses that the Denver offense is going to have, structural problems they're going to have going forward, but it keeps working for us as long as they keep winning. And the papers this morning saying Tebow leads another Bronco rally. Well, yeah, an offense that scored 3 points the entire game leading to that final drive. Here's what works, and you can be filing this away off to the side. Denver has been able to win these games, but in the 5 Tebow starts, if you had shopped around for the right numbers, you would be 4-1 playing against the Denver team total. That's where that window of opportunity is going to be awfully big going forward. At the same time, that defense is playing very well. Von Miller, going to be a Pro Bowler in his rookie season. It's the defense that's been winning these games, not Tebow, but we don't want anyone to know about that perception. We'll get a chance to win some more money in the weeks ahead. Teddy, what do you bring with us from Thursday night?
With the good stuff that's going to let us win more bets. We can't get that out to everyone. And I keep saying listening audience. That's too much radio over the years. Our audience, our viewing audience, thank you for watching. My first take on a Friday is really a second take, because I want to go back to something I talked about at the top of yesterday's show, talking about betting on or against college basketball teams early in the season as a profitable methodology for selecting college hoops winners, just finding teams to bet on and finding teams to fade. And we got a ton of questions about that. We got questions in email. We got questions in the posting forum. We got questions in the live chat all about this particular topic when it comes to college basketball teams. How do you know when to jump on? How do you know when to jump off? The concept is very simple. Throughout the course of the college basketball season, there are going to be mispriced teams. Teams that look good early, that fade off late, teams that started out poorly, that pick up steam, teams that get key players eligible, teams that lose key players to injuries or ineligibility. And as the teams themselves morph, the betting marketplace doesn't always morph with them. In the beginning of the season, how do you tell when to stop riding a team? Simple. They stop covering point spreads. How do you tell when to stop fading a team? Simple. They start covering point spreads. It's that simple. You talk about a Long Beach State that looks like a very live possibility. We got a great email question about Long Beach State yesterday. They're absolutely a team that, again, right now, maybe you ride them for a game or two. See what happens. We talked about UCLA as a prime team to fade. I got an email question about that. How do you know when to stop fading the Bruins? When they start winning and covering. It really is that simple. And speaking of simplicity, if it's time for a bad segue, that means it's time to go to MarketWatch. We're going to take a tour around the tournaments in college basketball this weekend because, boy, There's a bunch of them. Where do we have? We have tournaments in the U.S. Virgin Islands. We have tournament play in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Tournament play in Charleston, South Carolina. At Madison Square Garden. Lynchburg, Virginia. Lafayette, Louisiana. Heck, there's a tournament in Valpo, Indiana. Valparaiso hosting a tournament over the course of the next few days. Dave, what do we do with all of these early season college basketball tournaments? Because there's only going to be more on tap for next week.
Yeah, in fact, next week, you know, starting on Monday, the Maui Invitational, one of the best fields they've had in a long time for that one. Some big time action, you know, coming up in the days ahead. And yet what we find is these are among the most neglected and ignored of all opportunities on the betting board as people focus in more on football around this time of the year. I want to tell you a couple of different things. One is you look for certain elements in tourney play early, the biggest. And it's not going to come as a surprise, but you might want to look at where the positive elements come from. Who wants to win? Who really wants to get those early victories under their belts? Might sound obvious, because we're always looking for who wants to win in every sport, but you want to look for the little signs of teams, particularly those that might be on the bubble come March. Let's say a team like Virginia, which opens tournament play today. We're going to use Alabama as a really good example. Let's take a quote we got from Trevor Relaford, a sophomore guard for this year's team, talking about what happened to them last year, because right now they're in San Juan. Last year they were in St. Thomas. They went 0-3 in St. Thomas on that tournament. They felt that they didn't take it seriously. Come March, that 0-3 kept them out of the NCAA tournament. So here's Relaford talking about that. Last year we took the trip more as a vacation instead of a business trip. All of the guys who went to the Virgin Islands last year learned from that. We know that could change our season or determine things at the end. If you saw the way they played Maryland yesterday, they were prepared. They were focused. So the first thing you want to do, look for teams that are bringing a particular incentive to want to win these games.
And I want to talk about the back end of these tournaments. Once teams finish, whether they've had a successful run or an unsuccessful run throughout the course of whatever tournament they're playing, you'll oftentimes find really good opportunities immediately after the tournament. A team pulls three upsets in a row and ends up winning one of these tournaments in Puerto Rico or in Maui or wherever it's going to be. And then all of a sudden they go home, and instead of being plus three, they're minus eight. I mean, you see some really dramatic point spread adjustments based on the play in these early season tournaments. Teams that have that success, where they, you know, get their juices flowing and have a nice rhythm over the course of a weekend, it doesn't necessarily translate to playing well in their first game or two back, particularly if they have to stop somewhere before they get home and play a road game. At the other end of the spectrum, let's take a team like Alabama last year that went 0-3 in early season tournament play. Guess what? That team's going to come back. Some of those teams are disheartened. Others are angry and focused. And sometimes you have a team that stepped up in class, got slapped around a little bit, and then have an opportunity to step down in class following the tournaments that they're playing in. And boy, you can see some really good blowout situations in those ball games.
So what do you do immediately this weekend? Don't neglect the loser's bracket games in these tourneys. So many times people focus on winner versus winner because those end up being the better matchups. But look for these loser's bracket games, particularly if you've got a team off a loss that wants to get a win against a team that's just experimenting. We've got a handful of teams this weekend that are just experimenting in these tournaments. Whether they win the game or not is not a major consequence to them. Look for teams that don't really have at-large bids. Or prospects of that coming up. We talked about Virginia, you know, on the top of the show, being in that group of teams that believe that they're going to be somewhere. Let's look at Maryland under a new coach, putting in a new system. No urgency to win. You just want to get your system in play. So look in these loser bracket games to see if you can find one that wants to win against a team that doesn't care. You're going to find some sleeper value there. And one of the things we'll start doing next week is updating you on what we call the trip home. These teams that take the long trips, and next week we're talking about Alaska, we're talking about Hawaii, that takes you out of sorts a little bit, and that first game back can often be one of the most difficult games of the whole season.
Your emails have been a tremendous part of this show. Remember, this show is about you and what you want to see. So please, keep them coming in. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, the handle @VegasSportsDay. That's one word, @VegasSportsDay, and of course, you should be getting involved in the Covers.com community on a daily basis. Active threads and discussions going on right now. Covers.com. Simply click on the forums link. When we come back, we're going to talk about the NFL team trends.com. inside the numbers. And of course, we're going to answer some of those viewer emails right after this.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Before we go inside the numbers, and before I slap myself in the face again, it's time to answer some viewer emails. Let's start with this question. Chris Marquette Warrior Forever from Milwaukee. Gentlemen, show is great so far. Keep up the good work. I do have a question, though. 4% of bankroll at $2,500 equals $100 per play. This is referring back to an inside the numbers that we did earlier in the week. Week one, you go 5-2, and the bankroll stands at $2,780. Do you now increase your wager size to $111 per play? Or the reverse, the first week you go 2-5, and your bankroll is down to $2,150. Do you adjust down to $86 per play? I have always found this to be an interesting topic, and depending on how your season starts, can have both huge advantages or disadvantages compared to level play of $100 a wager.
What we did when we laid this out on an Inside the Number segment earlier in the week is we just used that level 100 through the season. You're going to get a lot of varying opinions on this. I'm going to give you one. A lot of people will say that I'm wrong. They may be right. We don't vary very much. So what other people are going to tell you, no, when you're hot, you want to step up. When you're cold, you want to press back. I've been following this for 30 years. I've seen very few people hot or cold. They think they're hot, or they might think they're cold, but in every outcome, you have three different factors in play. You have the line set by the odds makers, you have your own opinion against that line, and then the performance of the actual teams on the field. Your own aspect in that is actually the weakest element from a control standpoint. So here's the problem. You can have a winning week, but you weren't very good. Your handicapping wasn't good. Your ideas weren't very good. And if that happens, you might be stepping up your bets for the wrong reason, because you might be following up on bad ideas that are going to get you in trouble. The flip side, do you pull back off of a bad week even though your ideas might have been very good? So that's why we talk about things like the postmortem segments every day. Breaking down your decisions. Were your ideas good or not? Or were your wins mostly coming down to random coin flips? So we would be about as conservative from a money management standpoint as there's going to be. We try to stay steady and at that base level. If you like a particular game more, or you find a bad number on it, then you increase your bet then. But this notion that I'm going to increase my bets because I'm hot, you know, if we cash a bet with Michigan tomorrow afternoon, that has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with a bet we might have on Fresno State, Hawaii tomorrow night. Those teams are going to play the same game, same scoreboard result, whether we've cashed a bet or not. There's no correlation there. So I'm not going to step saying, I'm hot, I should bet more. No, we believe in slow and steady. Some mathematicians will say we're wrong, and they could be right on that. That's just our own personal take on that. This one's coming from Jamie A., another email. Similar theme in some aspects about that value equation. Guys, can you please answer this one for me? I believe it will relate to a lot of listeners. Say you tell us to lay NCAA basketball Stanford -3.5, but by the time we get to the book, the line is posted at -6, has already jumped 2.5 points. What number is just too much? I understand it is different in football and basketball, and football key numbers are an obvious factor. I have this problem repeatedly because my local book comes out with lines and totals only an hour before tip-off time.
Well, the first advice I would give you, Jamie, is find another out. You know, if your local book is only offering options in the last hour before kickoff or tip-off, you're really not able to take advantage of so many of the opportunities that are out there for serious sports bettors. I'm not saying you have to leave the local book. You could use that as one of your options. But any bettor who's serious about making money with their wagers has to have multiple options multiple outs, multiple sports books, whether it's bookies, whether it's offshore, whether it's here in Vegas, you need to have the opportunity to shop for the best line and not to be locked into whatever number your bookie wants to give you in a period where you're not going to have time to shop. So that's my number one piece of advice. In answering your question, it's almost like a poker question. The answer is it depends, and it really does. What I would tend, but my number one piece of advice for a question like this is that I would still make the wager at a worse number than the one that we recommended. However, I would adjust my unit size down. If it's something that you thought was a strong play at -3.5, at -6, clearly not as strong, you would bet that at a lower unit size or at a lower strength valuation of that particular equation. So if there are times that when we recommend a game and it moves, you know, it steams up like crazy across key numbers, particularly when we're talking about in football where these point spreads can explode and really make a big difference. But in basketball as well, there are times that you get to a point where a play that was a really good play the day before, a really good play that morning, may not even be worth a wager at all by kickoff or tip-off. That's why it's so important, whether you bet yourself or whether you follow a handicapper, to make sure you're getting timely information in a position where you can get bets down at an appropriate time. Okay, time to go inside the numbers, and joining us for the NFL edition of Inside the Numbers on Fridays will be one of those tools that really help us shorten our research time, the guys at NFLteamtrends.com.
We tell you that we do a lot of our college research, you know, by hand. We just don't have a tool out there that shortens it up. The NFL Team Trends does that for us, but it enables you to isolate certain particular situations. And this one we followed for a long time. In some ways, it may appear to be different this week, and that's why we're bringing it up. There's an interesting aspect coming into play when Detroit and Carolina play on Sunday. Yeah, Detroit hasn't been a competitive team for a long time. As such, when you get to this time of year, where they're sort of grandfathered into playing on Thanksgiving Day, there was always this question: if you're having a bad year, do you start looking ahead to Thanksgiving? Because the game you're playing on Sunday doesn't really mean that much. So we got a couple of elements here. First, when we go inside the numbers for this particular Friday, let's look at how Detroit has done the last 10 years, the Sunday before Thanksgiving. You see the Lions just 1-9 straight up, 3-7 against the spread. That lone win, by the way, 38-37 over Cleveland 2 years ago, a Matthew Stafford touchdown pass to Brandon Prediger on the last play of the game. Otherwise, it would have been an 0-10 run. So here's the interesting part, and be thinking about this when you break the game down for Sunday. Okay, the Lions are better this year, so they're not supposed to look ahead quite as much. But Teddy, who do they play Thursday? The undefeated Green Bay Packers, potentially the biggest Thanksgiving Day game the Lions have played since that memorable upset of the Packers back in the 60s. Even though Detroit's a better team this year, that look-ahead element may be in play every bit as strong.
Sure, and of course the Lions laying points to Carolina on Sunday. When we come back, we've got all the news you need to know in our Insider Six Pack.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny, because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's pop the top on today's Insider Six Pack. We've got a bunch of great tidbits of knowledge for you in this segment. And let's start with me being the Channel 4 weather girl, or the Channel 7 weather girl, or whatever you want to, whatever channel you watch, I'm the weather girl right now. Let's go through it. Let's start with some meaningful winds across the Midwest. Let's call them in the 10 to 20 mile per hour range for games at Missouri, Illinois, Purdue, Northwestern, and for both Michigan and Michigan State. So we could see some wind issues affecting the downfield passing games in all of those Big 10 and Big 12 games. Here are some other games worth tracking. New Mexico, Wyoming. Hey, it's winter already in Laramie. We can see 1 to 3 inches of snow between now and kickoff. It's going to be a blustery Saturday with the wind chill in the lower teens by kickoff. Utah-Washington State, a chance, a pretty good chance we could see some snow in Pullman again. Kickoff temperature near freezing and wind chill in the mid-20s. Louisiana Tech and Nevada, kickoff temperatures in the mid to upper 30s and a wind chill that will fall below freezing. UNLV Air Force, it's not too cold in Colorado Springs. We could have wind gusts up to 25 miles an hour. And last but not least, USC and Oregon, ooh, chance of showers. Rain's not going to help the Ducks team speed. Wind chill, 35 degrees at kickoff.
We're going to see Tyler Bray back at quarterback for Tennessee this week. And we told you about Bray in an earlier postmortem a couple of weeks ago and how it coincided with them going up against one of the most brutal schedule stretches any team will ever have to play in college football. You can make a case that they played four of the top 7 or 8 defenses in the country in consecutive weeks while he was out, certainly the top two, Alabama and LSU. Bray is back. When they take the field, you're going to see something a little bit different. A lot of shotgun and pistol formations. Has Tennessee changed the offense? No. It's simply Bray's coming back from an injured thumb. They found when he was taking snaps from center that was putting too much pressure on the thumb. It's easier for him to take a shotgun snap. So even though it'll look like a different offense, they're running the same plays. They believe they can run the same running plays out of the shotgun as they did from under center earlier. But Tyler Bray back for Tennessee tomorrow.
Let's play along with the wind and snow in Laramie, New Mexico, Wyoming. And this is a game where maybe revenge actually does matter a little bit, maybe more than a little bit. There's only going to be one team all season that's going to have revenge on New Mexico. Lobos managed one win last year, and it came against the Wyoming Cowboys. And it was a particularly frustrating loss for Wyoming. They piled up over 500 yards of offense in that ballgame, but they were -4 in turnovers and suffered the embarrassment of losing to the last place Lobos. So what did Cowboy head coach Dave Christensen do this week to make sure his team remembered that loss? Well, in every practice facility, in every weight room, a film was running of New Mexico beating Wyoming last year, repeatedly showing videos of that defeat. Wyoming may not just be out to win this week. They may be out to win big.
Big question for the San Diego Chargers we see in discussions is about their character. You know, will they bounce back off these losses? Do they have what it takes mentally? Maybe not enough focus on the physical aspect. If you saw that game against Oakland, you saw an offensive line that was nothing but patchwork by the end of the game. It looks like it's not going to get any better. Turns out that concussion Chris Dielman suffered against the Jets is a serious one. The 3-time Pro Bowler will not be back this year. Marcus McNeil, who went down in the first half with a stinger against Oakland, we don't expect to see him this week. Luis Vasquez, the right guard, also unlikely to play. And also his backup, Tyrone Green, unlikely to be there. That means you're talking about 4 of the top 6 guys in that offensive line rotation. How bad could it be at right guard this week against the Bears? Right now it's down to Tony Moll and Steven Schilling for that starting spot. Moll was just signed on Tuesday. Schilling has played 1 down in his NFL career.
The Chargers aren't the only ones with offensive line problems right now. There are big concerns for Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks. You know, Seattle thought they built a pretty good foundation for the future. They drafted a couple of offensive linemen this past April. Right tackle James Carpenter and right guard John Moffitt. That was their first 2 picks in the draft this past April. And those two have started every game next to each other. Unfortunately for Seattle, they're back to square one because both Carpenter and Moffitt have been lost for the season with season-ending injuries over the past 5 days. And that leaves Seattle with a mess on the right side of that offensive line. For now, pencil in Paul McQuiston, who had 3 starts earlier this year at left guard, to replace Moffitt. Brino Giacomi to take over at right tackle for Carpenter. And let's keep in mind that the Seahawks starting quarterback, Tavares Jackson, continues to play through a strained pectoral muscle that may require offseason surgery. We'll have to see if Jackson's going to be willing to scramble out of the pocket under pressure, and St. Louis does bring pressure, or if he's a little bit gun-shy about taking some of those hits.
Speaking of quarterbacks who could be a little bit gun-shy, what is Michael Vick's status for Sunday night? We don't know. Been a lot of speculation running rampant the last couple of days. Here's what we can say factually. Of course, Vick has not practiced. But you do that when a guy's got a couple of broken ribs. He doesn't need to practice, doesn't need to take unnecessary hits. They've got a flak jacket for him, As late as yesterday afternoon, Marty Mornhuweg, the offensive coordinator, said that he was optimistic that Vic would play. So why do we see the game come down this morning? We see steam to the Giants. Rumor gets out that Vic will be out. Said, okay, let's trace this back. Let's get to the source of it. Turns out it came from the Wilmington, Delaware News Journal. One of their bloggers said that unidentified team sources had said that Vic won't play. I'm not sure we want to believe that yet. And that if you're Philadelphia, you don't need to declare Vic out yet. There's nothing forcing you to. You can wait until Sunday. Keep the Giants guessing. Here's the one thing we do know. We had talked earlier in the week about whether it would be Vince Young or Mike Kafka. Young has taken every snap with the first team offense the last 2 days in practice. That means he's throwing the ball to DeSean Jackson, who's back with the team after being suspended on Sunday, but not throwing it to Jeremy Maclin just yet. Maclin's got a hamstring injury. They're not going to know until Sunday if he can go. One note on the side for the Giants, Ahmad Bradshaw already ruled out one more game with that broken foot.
When we come back, it's time for Money Time. In fact, a double dose of Money Time. NFL and college editions on the way.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys. Let's raise the roof on a weekend's worth of winners. It's money time! Let's start in Madison Square Garden. College hoops tonight. Arizona -3.5, total 140 against Mississippi State, who's played pretty well despite some limited production from their big men so far this season.
Here's a good example of what was asked in our Inside the Numbers segment is when do you get off of a game that you may have liked? You could have taken 5.5 with Mississippi State this morning. Some of us did. Now the 5's gone. Now the 4's gone. Is there any value left? Maybe not at this point. I'm surprised that the markets bought it this quickly, but it was a bad opening number. So many times in football, we talk about skewed turnover stats or skewed statistics. Producing results are a little bit phony. I think that's what we saw out of the Garden last night. Arizona makes 14 out of 29 from three-point range. That's awfully good shooting. They only made 18 three-pointers in their first three games combined, and those are three games at home against pretty weak defenses. We don't expect that shooting to continue, but boy, you talk about an outlier statistically. Yesterday, we talked about Renardo Sidney and Arnett Moultrie, the two big guys. Mississippi State has two NBA size guys up front. They combined to shoot 2 for 18 against Texas A&M. Almost all of those right around the basket. That's almost a spin of the roulette wheel. Yet even with that, they won the game wire to wire and controlled it by 9 points. So I think those two disparate elements made this opening line a lot higher than it was supposed to be.
Well, the other factor in the opening line being as high as it was for Arizona was that the Wildcats took a boatload of money in yesterday's game. And, of course, they won and covered in that contest. And whenever the books take a real hit on a team in college hoops, particularly early in the season, they'll make immediate adjustments. They saw all the Arizona money coming in yesterday. They took a bath on that game. They're like, all right, today let's make sure we're not going to take a bath in the Wildcats. Well, they may end up taking a bath on Mississippi State instead. But you do see those type of adjustments and over-adjustments, particularly early in the campaign. And when we talk about these two teams in terms of their defensive intensity, there's certainly something worth noting right now. You know, Arizona won yesterday. They played a great offensive game. 18 assists, only 10 turnovers. Dave referenced some of their shooting stats. You know, really strong stuff from the Wildcats on the offensive end of the court. But defensively, you know, this is a team that allowed 21 of 39 shooting from two-point range, better than 50% for the Red Storm in yesterday's ball game. Mississippi State, on the other hand, their defense has been pretty darn good throughout the course of the Stansberry era. It continues to be good right now. They held A&M to less than 41% shooting, and they won the battle of the boards.
All big college football programs have their homecoming week. This is our Vegas Sports Day homecoming game. Teddy Covers gets to go back to Ann Arbor, Michigan, the first meeting between Nebraska and Michigan since they became partners in the Big Ten. Michigan right now a 3.5-point favorite, total of 51. Teddy, it's been a long time since the Big House has hosted a game that'll have the sort of atmosphere we're going to see tomorrow. Does it make you wish you were back there?
No, I like being in Vegas. It's cold back there. You know, this is my home. Right here in the Vegas Video Network studio is my home away from home. And Vegas sports, I couldn't stand it. I don't want to be in Ann Arbor for Nebraska. You want to be in Ann Arbor for Ohio State, maybe, the following week, but not this week. Wasn't there a game in Ann Arbor a couple of years ago where Michigan and Ohio State were 1-2 playing for the right to play for the national title? Yeah, there have been big games in the Big House in the not-too-distant past. That was, that's got to be 5 years ago now. That was still in the end of the Lloyd Carr era. Time flies, including on this show, which means we've got to give him the analysis of this ballgame. On yesterday's show, we broke down Michigan's defense, talked about the improvements that the Wolverines had made defensively in the first year of the Brady Hoke era. Now, today, I need to talk about this Nebraska team because we're talking about serious injury problems for the Cornhuskers in the trenches. How about this? They finished out their game against Penn State last week where they got completely shut down in the second half in terms of scoring points. They finished up that game with not one, but two former walk-ons starting on the offensive line, both guard positions occupied by former walk-ons. They have depth concerns all over that offensive line. The defensive line, at nose tackle, they're missing their two best players, and the replacement suffering from a hamstring injury. So big issues for Nebraska in the trenches against a Wolverines team that's been really dominating that battle.
And if you're weak in the trenches, welcome to the Big Ten. Yeah, Nebraska comes in with this reputation for playing physical football, which they could do because in the Big 12, their former conference, you have a lot of finesse teams. A lot of teams that have gone to wide open passing attacks who don't see the ground game that much. So Nebraska had a lot of matchup advantages. They're finding out in the Big 10, it's a little bit tougher. The offense was very ineffective at Penn State, woefully ineffective at Wisconsin. Going to be difficult for them to get traction against that very improved Michigan defense. But maybe this is the week we also see something special from Denard Robinson. It's kind of been a disappointing year for him. A couple of elements in play. One is a playbook, not designed as well to take advantage of his skills. They've tried to make this a bit of a square peg, round hole phenomenon. But look for them in the bigger games to get back to more of what Robinson does best. But also the fact that through most of Big Ten play, Robinson's been up against teams that know him now, that have been up against him in the past. This is the first look for Nebraska. They may not know just how quick he really is. He may get some leverage and make some big plays early against a Nebraska defense, seeing him for the first time.
And let's not forget, in Nebraska's lone previous try this year against a quarterback with pretty good team, pretty good foot speed and the ability to throw downfield, that came against Braxton Miller for Ohio State, who was playing his first collegiate road start. And guess what? 27-6, Buckeyes led that game in the third quarter. Miller got hurt. Nebraska rallied, but the bottom line is that with Miller in the ballgame, the Ohio State Buckeyes were three touchdowns better than the Nebraska Cornhuskers on their home field. Now let's go to Eugene, Oregon, where right now the Ducks -14.5, total 67.5, as they take on the USC Trojans this coming Saturday.
Southern Cal has played about as well as any team in the nation the last couple of weeks. If you saw them dominate Notre Dame on the road wire to wire, saw them play Stanford deep into the night in that tough overtime loss, saw them dominate a good and bowl-bound Washington team, you see the raw potential that Southern Cal has. They've got good first-line talent. But the question this week could be one of depth. In a postmortem earlier this week, we talked about the Oregon defense and about how they're so much better conditioned than the teams they're up against. So let's raise this depth issue. Last year, Southern Cal leads Oregon 32-29 in the third quarter. They lose the game 53-32. It was a 24-0 Oregon runout because they were deeper and better conditioned. Are we possibly looking at the same thing again, where Southern Cal can match up well for the first half, but might not be able to go toe-to-toe in a 15-round fight?
Well, that's the question here, is that USC, with some depth issues on the defensive side of the football, and this is an Oregon offense last year, 599 total yards against USC, and that was 311 on the ground, 288 through the air. Perfect balance for that Oregon offense. We haven't seen anyone shut down the Ducks since their season opener against LSU. So if USC is going to hang around in this ballgame, they're going to need to score some points, and they may have a key guy back in the lineup to allow them to do that. Robert Woods, their star wide receiver, a guy who's going to be a first-round NFL draft choice and an impact player at the next level, he's been upgraded to Pro Bowl. They must get something from Woods if they're going to hang around and have a chance at covering this number.
So let's say if you like Southern Cal, look at the first half only. And you might get some value. You'll be able to take more than a touchdown for the first half. Watch out for that depth as the game moves into the latter stages. So if you're watching the game and you see some opportunity for Oregon to maybe make a second half bet, you might be onto something. I said Oregon in the second half of games in November last year, we already saw against Stanford this year, they've been terrific.
Real good. They've been monsters at covering some of those second half numbers for the last couple years in the Chip Kelly era. Let's go out to Honolulu, Hawaii, where right now the Warriors, -5 total, 63.5 against Fresno State. This is your late night bailout special when it comes to West Coast action. Everyone wants a winner at the end of the night. And Fresno is a team that we've talked about a fair bit on the show this week. Some of the concerns about Pat Hill and his staff moving forward. It's a Fresno defense that's been miserable so far in 2011. Any chance they can improve here, Dave?
Probably not. In a postmortem earlier in the week, we talked about the resignation, which was actually a firing of their defensive coordinator. And we got a couple of emailer questions and people asking us about it. And what's been interesting, since we've been on the air, Hawaii's had 3 late-night home games. We're getting more questions about those than the bigger games earlier in the day, so we know a lot about your habits. Can that defense get better? Probably not. When Pat Hill was at his peak with this program, it was a defense based on physical play. They were tough at the line of scrimmage. They knocked people down. Well, now he's in a finesse conference. You have to have speed. You have to be able to play pass defense. It's just a different style of football than he's accustomed to coaching. Now you're going out to a very fast surface in Hawaii where that defense would seemingly be even more vulnerable, except for some problems that Hawaii has. And so it might not be a question of can the Fresno defense get better. Is the Hawaii offense healthy enough to take advantage?
Oh, yeah. There are all kinds of issues with Hawaii. And, you know, Hawaii's in a good spot, theoretically. Plenty of motivation. They have a 3-game homestand right here to close out the regular season. If they win 2 of those 3 games, it's going to be a 4-game homestand. It's going to play at home on Christmas Eve in the Hawaii Bowl. But, of course, we talked about the injury to the Warriors quarterback, Bryant Moniz, a 2-year starter. And now we're looking at the senior, Shane Austin, who is not very good, and the sophomore, David Graves, who lacks experience. And, boy, does Hawaii have a depleted wide receiving core right now. Justin Clapp, Alan Sampson, out for the season. Royce Pollard has been a star for this team. He has been banged up, unable to practice all week, and even if he does suit up, the new quarterbacks will not have had much of an opportunity to develop any chemistry with him. So while there are big issues with Fresno, there are a lot of big issues with Hawaii here too.
So we know you want something because you've been asking. Well, here's a nice little way of us copping out. This is a tough game because of so many different factors. But you see that current line of Hawaii, -5? How about lay 4, take 6? If you see it, let the line itself be that determining factor if you have to be in play, because we know come kickoff, you're going to have to be. Hopefully, though, that by then you've got some money in your pocket because it's play of the daytime. And okay, Teddy, you necessarily don't want to go back to your alma mater, but can you at least bet them?
I can bet them this week, and I will bet them this week, and I have bet them already. So the bottom line is this week's play of the day, college football edition for Saturday. We're going to take MGO Blue, the Michigan Wolverines, -3.5. Not as big as a wager as if this game was still sitting at 3. But at 3.5, I still believe the Wolverines are worthy of a recommendation. We're going to lay it with Michigan on Saturday. Take the Wolverines -3.5.
When we come back, it's going to be Money Time NFL edition, and you don't have to adjust the volume. This time, Teddy won't scream.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
It's Money Time NFL edition, and we're going to start in Cleveland, Ohio, home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and home of the Jaguars and Browns matchup for this weekend. Not maybe the most marquee game on the NFL slate. But we don't care about marquee games. We care about making money. That's why we call it money time. And right now, Cleveland, -1 total, as low as you've seen in the NFL all year, just 34.5.
If you've been watching faithfully since we came on the air, and we really appreciate those of you that have, Cleveland's been a pretty prime topic. They've been in Insider Six-Pack segments talking about the running back injuries. We did a postmortem last week talking about how overrated that pass defense is. Cleveland's got an awful lot of holes. But so much of it still focuses about those running back issues. Only 2 rushing touchdowns all season. And in the last 4 games, not a single touchdown in the first 3 quarters of play. That's what happens when you really don't have an NFL caliber running back in the backfield. Teams do not have to respect that ability to run. It takes your play action out. It takes away so many things you want to do offensively. And even when you do finally get drives together, like last week against St. Louis, when they got into the red zone a lot, you don't finish in the red zone if you don't have a back who can convert those 3rd-and-1 opportunities. You need to be able to run the ball near the goal line if you're going to be successful. So it looks like yet another tough week for Cleveland. No Peyton Hillis again. As each day goes by, Montario Hardesty looks more and more doubtful. It looks like that same decrepit running back rotation that has not been able to produce not only has to go out there again this week, but against a tough and physical Jacksonville rush defense. That St. Louis team Cleveland couldn't run on last week, near the bottom of the NFL in rush defense. Jacksonville this week, they're closer to the top.
Well, there's a lot of things to like about this Jags team. I think they're going to be a late-season moneymaker. They already have been a mid-season moneymaker. Jags have covered, what now, each of the last 4 weeks. They had the upset win on Monday Night Football against Baltimore. And they have the classic makeup of a late-season NFL profit train. What are we looking for from these type of teams? Number one, they have a losing record, not going to the playoffs. Number two, they're playing in a small market, not getting on TV, not drawing much attention. And number three, they play good defense. And that's a winning combination year in, year out. You look for a team that was very bad in September, that has stepped up a little bit. They're playing defense and no one's paying any attention. Classic recipe for second half NFL point spread success. They're dogs to Cleveland, you know, and Cleveland stinks, which is telling us very clearly the market's not respecting the Jags yet. We saw them win on the road last week with a mature victory at Indianapolis. I know the Colts stink even worse than the Browns do, but the bottom line is that for a young team to get a win on the road after struggling mightily in early season road games, it's a confidence boost for Jacksonville, which can only improve their chances here.
Let's go to Baltimore, where the Ravens are now down to 6.5, a total of 40.5 against the Bengals. If you saw a little bit of Cincinnati money trickling in this morning, there's a reason for that. Looks like Ray Lewis, a no-go, at least for 1 game for Baltimore, possibly for a few. He suffered a toe injury in last week's loss at Seattle, flew all the way down to Florida to see a specialist during the week. They're saying doesn't look like he can play. Daniel Ellerbe going to have to start step in and replace him at middle linebacker. Kind of a break for the Bengals to take on a team that won't have the Lewis leadership. But the question is going to be the Cincinnati leadership a little bit. We talked in last week's game against Pittsburgh how it was one of their first true step-up affairs. They only played 1 team the entire season that would have qualified for the playoffs before that one. Bengals actually played pretty well, but they made some mistakes late and they lost. Now, how about this for a setup? It's week 10 of the NFL season, and they're playing a team with a winning record on the road for the first time. Rarely does a team get 10 weeks in with that happening. Are the Bengals really ready to step up?
Well, that's a good question. And in my mind, a lot of it has to do with whether A.J. Green's healthy or not. If you've not watched this Andy Dalton-A.J. Green combination for Cincinnati, it's explosive. I mean, these guys really have great chemistry. They have from the beginning of the season, and an offense that early on under coordinator Jay Gruden was all dink and dunk, it's opened up. And Dalton's firing away downfield right now. And that's probably the best way to attack this Ravens defense. You're not going to beat Baltimore in general trying to run up the gut and, you know, blocking Haloti Ngata. It doesn't happen very easily. And perhaps without Ray Lewis, we could see some ability for Cincinnati to run the ball between the tackles and Cedric Benson. And Benson, you know, he's a plotter. He's a 3 yards in a cloud of dust guy. But without Lewis, maybe they'll have some success. But the bottom line is that if Cincinnati's going to win this game and or cover this number, they're going to need some plays from the passing game. Green, A.J. Green, has been unable to practice all week. Couldn't practice again yesterday. Very much a question mark whether he's going to be able to go on Sunday.
Of course, losing Green hurts Andy Dalton. But playing the Ravens, in some ways, might actually help him because the Ravens might keep him in the game. It's been a recurring theme we've talked about with this team over the course of the last few weeks. The lack of an offensive identity. When they lost at Jacksonville on a Monday night, we talked about how limited the number of carries Ray Rice got. Look at last week's loss at Seattle. Ray Rice got 5 carries from scrimmage the entire game. Why don't you give the ball to your best player? That's how that one got away.
Let's go to Chicago, the Windy City. Right now, the Bears, about a 3.5-point favorite against the San Diego Chargers for Sunday's afternoon matchup. Total in that ballgame, 45. And right now, these are two teams that have absolutely been heading in opposite directions for the last month. The Bears come in off 4 straight wins and covers. The Chargers come in off 4 straight losses and non-covers.
And the Bears aren't just covering the spread, they're shattering it. Those last 4 covers are by 69 points. That's very rare in the NFL. It's rare that you see a team over a 4-game stretch get above 40 points over the spread, which would be 10 points per game. They're beating it by over 17. Now, there's a little correlation here. Give the ball to Matt Forte, win games. It's that simple. Ravens, Ray Rice, maybe you could figure that out. These last 4 games, Forte, 84 carries, 429 yards, also 12 catches for 94 more yards. It's showing them that they've got an ability to do something that not only shows the talent that Forte has, but it takes pressure off of Jay Cutler. An offensive line that had a miserable time protecting him finds out that life is better when you can run the ball, be able to use play action, and put the defensive front on their heels a little bit.
And, you know, this is a real character test for the Chargers, because not only are they losing, they are injury-riddled on both sides of the football. We talked earlier in the show about some of the concerns on the offensive line. Again, 4 of their top 6 offensive linemen, either questionable, doubtful, or out this coming weekend. You have issues with Malcolm Floyd, a wide receiver. He's not going to go again this week. He's an impact player in the passing game for Phillip Rivers. We have issues on the defensive side of the football without Sean Phillips in the lineup for San Diego. And after watching them play over the course of last month, we have to go, well, is it injuries? Or is this defense really not that talented? Remember, they lost coordinator Ron Rivera to the Carolina Panthers this past offseason. So it's a Charger team that's struggling with character concerns, struggling with injury concerns, going on the road, playing a late afternoon game in the cold in Chicago. Those are not necessarily positive signs.
Let's go to Sunday night in the Meadowlands. We saw some giant money coming in before we went on the air. Haven't been able to obviously track that movement over about the last hour or so. Look like up to 5.5. The total down to 45.5. Again, based on a report that came from one source that others are following up on, that Michael Vick would not play. Again, we're not sure an official announcement's been made. We don't think an official announcement was necessary yet. If you're not sure about Vick, you leave the rumor out there, because the Giants have enough problems in practice this week. They got 3 key guys on defense, Michael Boley, and if you saw the San Francisco game last week, when he left the field, that defense really missed him at linebacker. 2 corners, Aaron Ross, Prince Amukamara, also dinged up in practice this week. If they don't know who they're preparing for, Michael Vick, Vince Young, maybe Mike Kafka, you've got an opportunity to confuse that Giant defense a little bit and throw them out of rhythm.
Let's talk about the Vince Young factor here for a minute, because Vince Young has always been a guy that's attracted a lot of attention at the NFL level. Sometimes he's been very good. Other times he's been more than a little bit spotty throughout the course of his career. But we look at Young in this matchup. He's a guy who brings athleticism to the table, no question. He brings the ability to scramble out of pressure in the pocket, much like Michael Vick. And he's been practicing with the first stringers all week in practice. But one of the biggest concerns about Young, dating back to his tenure with the Texas Longhorns, throughout his tenure with the Tennessee Titans, accuracy, particularly on the short pass. The Eagles run a lot of short passes and look for their receivers to make big plays once they get the ball in space. Vince Young, well, can he hit those guys in stride in order to create those yards after catch opportunities? And is he ready to be calling signals on the road in a hostile environment with an offense that he's never played in an NFL game before? He's obviously been running the practice for the Eagles, but he has not yet been starting on a field against a real defense with this particular ball club.
So not easy to make money in the Meadowlands on Sunday night. This line could close anywhere from the Giants 3.5 to 6.5 based on the ultimate Vick announcement. But here's where we can make money. It's NFL play of the daytime. And at the start of the show, we teased about taking a Jaguar out on a good road course. Jacksonville actually brings a nice chemistry to be successful on the road. The Jaguars run the ball. They play physical defense. Those are 2 things Cleveland does not do. Let's make the Jacksonville Jaguars at Cleveland, our NFL play of the day will put the same money into play that we cashed with the Jaguars at Indianapolis last week. We like the way that this team is built to handle the road.
And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. We'll be back again on Monday. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.